Welcome to the Easy Yoga Podcast with myself, Gemma Neese, Easy Yoga founder, author, yoga coach, and relationship coach. It is my pleasure to have you here and for you to feel energized, calm, happy, and for you to have the perfect relationship with yourself, your partner, and your family without seeing a family therapist, changing your personality, or leaving your job. You will learn techniques and things to help you guide you through a better life through health, meditation, yoga, journaling, nutrition, and all things yoga, for you to have the life you deserve and crave, and for you to love yourself on a soul level. Thank you so, so much for being here today, and I am so grateful and so full of love to have you here. Enjoy this next episode. Everyone, and welcome back to another episode from Easy Yoga, all things relationships, yoga, and well-being. And today, my special guest is Jacob Tomkins, and he is the founder of the new Umbrella Project. Jacob left hectic London life to purchase the woodland area in Shropshire on which the Umbrella will take place in July. Jacob's mission is to work with people who want to feel invigorated by nature as opposed to conventional therapy. He is also dedicated to long-term protection and conservation of the woodland area. So welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Gemma. Cheers.
That's all right. I'm really excited for our conversation.
Yes.
So how did you kind of get into what you're doing now? Because you did work in London, and what was your kind of backstory?
Yeah, I think the backstory of working in the city and fast-paced life and being very distracted by that life, the material world, is the same as how I got into well-being, which is that I suffered from a lot of problems in the body to do with alignment of the skeleton and the gut. It was to do with being born out of alignment, born feet first.
Oh, wow.
So, we don't discover these things until we get a bit older and how these chronic pains start to come into play. But I was suffering from chronic pain in my 20s. But all the way from when I was 10, 11 years old, all the way into my mid 20s. And I needed to figure out how to fix it.
Yeah.
So I went into a deep journey into yoga and martial arts and Eastern practices of physical practices. And later on went into exploring things like plant medicines and herbology and things like that to really understand how the ancient people used to deal with problems like this, because they, of course, they've always been around.
Yeah, because I think as well with our Western style of working, or just in general, actually I'm sitting down, I normally do stand up for these, but I can feel myself already hunching forwards.
Yeah, I'm legged on my yoga mat.
So you're better than me, you're sitting on a yoga mat.
we should be squatting, yeah.
We should.
Yes, our lives are toxic in many ways. The modern world is quite toxic, yeah. So I think, yeah, that not only we need to find what's good for us, but do more of it than humans probably ever have had to before, just to maintain balance.
Yeah, yeah. And by going back to our roots or being more intuitive, that's the word.
Yeah. One.
And I think even now the Eastern world certainly knows what they're doing in terms of that kind of thing, rather than what we do. And like, we're constantly working all the time, we have more of a work balance than we do like a life. And you kind of found that working in London, and then before we started recording you'd said that you'd been to India or been traveling, and yeah, was that where you found yoga? Was India?
No, actually I didn't find it there. My sister, there's a family business which is a yoga business. My sister's a teacher. I got exposed to it luckily that way. I don't think that the East or the West nowadays has it. I just think that the East seems to have retained more in the culture of the actual teachings.
True.
Holistic teachings, as the West calls it, all encompassing.
Yeah.
But it was very easy in India, of course, to involve myself and totally immerse myself in not only the natural world in my spare time, but also so much classes and so much experiential stuff to do there in still today in today's culture.
Yeah.
Which is around yoga and around sound and meditation and these ancient practices. So I was able to develop my own personal practice so that it's now an embodiment of my life and part of my everyday life I definitely had found the time in that culture to express it.
Yes, yeah, and find you what you want to do now. So what then ended up being that you left your London job to now what you do now? Stress.
So yes, it was, well, it was also that I felt like, so it was stress. There was clearly problems going on, not just in the body, but in my life. Things weren't right. And it felt like all of the decisions that I'd made had led or had been made with a slight lack of clarity or real knowingness of why I'm doing anything. And so shrinking back from that was really important. And I was aware, most people are aware that you really need to completely detach from one thing and stop one thing in order to discover fully what you are in another thing. You can't leave one foot behind in one room if you're going through a door, as they say. Yeah, so it's a discovery of all of the layers, you know, of the aspects of the self that have been hiding.
Yeah.
And I just needed to find out if I could find a way to live or a way to be, which meant a new way of earning money and a new place to be and, you know, new ways of acting and new ways of putting things in and out of my body and mind. If I made those changes, would life change completely around me as well, as I'd read in the scriptures, as it were? You know?
Yeah, that's amazing. So then what made you want to buy a woodland and do what you do now?
So I realized is that I wanted to work outdoors. I wanted to work in nature. I wanted to not be sitting down. I wanted to work with people. I wanted to work with truth. And I didn't want to work in the frothiness of sales and marketing anymore, or the world of deals. I wanted to work on systems and processes, and I wanted to strip everything right back.
Yeah.
And so I, by the law of, you know, divisibility, I just arrived at, well, I just need to find an empty piece of land and start building a space there from scratch that's good for me, and employ all of these notions there. And also I've always had a real love for creating spaces and environments and being involved in inspiration and motivation and moving things along. So the whole, all of that energy needed to be packaged up. So I knew I needed to buy a woodland, and I wanted to build and learn how to build off grid and how to sustain myself, food, water, power. I wanted to become a fully sustainable individual, and that meant physically and geographically as well.
Yeah.
So those were some driving factors.
So I presume then you'd like nature in real life normally. You want to
love
just
it.
Be outside in nature all the time, because it's just incredible, isn't it? It's like, it is, nature is truly our biggest healer and teacher, I think, because you can get so much from it, and not even if you are wanting to just be inside all the time, you can feel so much from it and just be there and be present.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah, we are natural things.
Yeah.
And something happens to us when we go into a fully natural environment. Yeah.
You feel good.
It's unique to us. Sometimes we feel worse before we feel better.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it definitely has an impact no matter what.
Yeah.
And to determine for others what that impact is a falsity. Mm-hmm. It's, you can't. But it definitely is a very powerful force. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So with your retreat, what's it called? And how does it kind of work?
It is called the Umbrella Project. So
where's that name come from?
Umbrella is a made up word.
Fair enough.
Because I wanted a brand that was going to be able to adapt and change with me. And I wanted something that was bigger than just a person and more reliable and carried the philosophy. But the OHM is ohms, actually, is about electrical resistance. And it's about charging up the system and the body with all the things that we need to make the cells more electrically resistant and permeable and active and effective. So it's about the body, really. Yeah. And it's about the umbrella is a shroud of electrical resistance to protect you from elemental forces. That's where it comes from. And that was a journey I took on that word. And yeah, the project is a full immersion into nature. So it's an off-grid site that I've built with power and water and completely addressless, no address, in the middle of a forest. And people will come for a week.
Wow.
And experience a complete disconnection from their lives and from the outside world, and be able to learn multiple different skills along the way. But it's built sort of like an ashram, and it's a conservation course. That's the theme, is it's a theme about being in the forest and learning how the forest works while being taught mastery of the body and somatic work and breath work. And there's a private chef who's going to be cooking, and he's food alchemist, Matt, who's my friend and since the beginning of the woodland journey. And so we're putting on a sort of a show, a theatrical food and nutrition and well-being show, while also teaching all the skills that are required to do what I've done so far in the woods. And it's all really to support nature. So what everyone's going to be doing from a conservation point of view is helping to construct pathways and platforms and areas so that they can enjoy nature and get that sense of achievement of actually building things and things like tree houses in the woods, you know.
That's really cool.
And it's sort of a culmination of all of my learnings from the last 7 years in well-being, but also building these kind of experiences and places in India, where and festivals, which I was involved in a lot in my 20s as well. So it's kind of like a magical forest that I'm trying to create as a space for transformation. And of course the rest of the year I'm doing all of the forestry and conservation work there, so this is my coming together of knowledges and teachings, and it's obviously an absolute dream to be in the woods during summer.
I love it. I love being in the woods, and especially we've got National Trust membership and we take the kids there. Most weekends we'll go to a National Trust, but you'll always find me climbing up a tree and another adult. So like, why? You're an adult, you don't do that. No, I do that.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's childlikeness is the most adult thing in the world, actually. And it's not childish at all.
No. And it's like, well, why do you have to get rid of the fun? Yeah, you're an adult and you've got responsibilities, but still, it doesn't matter. You still have to have fun.
Exactly. And that's it. Is National Trust is amazing. And we've got some amazing spaces all over the country. I was just working down in Sussex last month in a different woodland, which is a 700 acre.
Wow.
Or is it, 70 acre. forest, which is mine, is only 15 acres, so it's small in comparison, but it's owned by a couple who are in their late 80s, 88 89, and it's a permissive woodland, so anyone can go there at any time and enjoy it. And they keep it in an ancient way. They practice ancient coppice art of managing the woodland in true cycles. And it's just that there are amazing places to go everywhere, but there are very few places to go where we can go and stay and be healthy and immerse ourselves.
Yeah.
And just going back to what you're saying is I love being in the woods. One of the first parts of the journey was learning how to actually do it, actually how to live there and be healthy.
Yeah.
Because of course, being exposed to the elements all the time is difficult. So dipping in for a day is fine. How do we find those times to spend more time in these places? It's almost been my question.
And do you do foraging as well on there?
I'm a basic, I'm an amateur forager.
I am that's it.
I have people who are much better than me who help and teach that in my woods. But there's, that's a big part of living there, is knowing what you can and can't eat from the from the soil. I have a degree of knowledge about my own woods, but every area is different. That stuff fascinates me. And in the woods, in the Umbrella project, we're doing forage to fork, so people will be foraging with a couple of people, and then eating their food.
That's great. Oh, that's amazing. Because you're kind of bringing it back into it and people are learning, so then they can do it as well when they get back home.
Yeah. I want to fill people's minds up with all these possibilities, you know.
Yes.
It's about, like, we walk past these things all the time. We don't take the time to get the knowledge.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you can throw it at everyone, back to back,
and immerse them
through. And there is so much to eat in nature. It's actually amazing. I'm always shocked every time my friend comes, Alec, to the woods, or anyone who's into mushrooms or moss.
Moss, you can eat moss.
certain kinds, yeah. Apparently.
Wow.
Like I say, I'm an amateur.
I didn't even know that. That's really cool. And like with mushrooms, obviously there are ones that you can eat and can eat and you can't eat, but is there other types as well? Like not magic mushrooms and stuff. Never done that, but yeah. But you're not like in, well, you might be into psychedelic ones.
I mean, psychedelic medicine is fine. Yeah, I don't, it's not part of my practice, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I've experimented, you know, across my life, various different things, but no, it's all about natural, non-hallucinatory induction. You know, it's about, my work is about connecting through what we already have.
Yeah.
Mushrooms are a massive part of nutrition though for me, and non-psychedelic mushrooms, we'd say gourmet or just eating edible mushrooms. But they are also called medicinal, some of them, and things like popular ones at the moment, like lion's mane and reishi and chaga, cordyceps. These are all mushrooms that people will have heard of that have actual medicinal applications as you eat them. So they're known for doing amazing things. The way they carry nutrition into the body and help distribute nutrition in the body is unbelievable. The science that's being revealed at the moment. So I'm starting to grow food, and I'm starting to grow native mushrooms within the woods as well.
Oh, that's amazing. That's really good. And I think as well, we do need to get back to more of that, as in using, well, when the kids have got, I don't know, greys or something, we've got just up here, where is it? There is an aloe vera plant, and they will come and pick bits off and then rub it on them. And I think that's just so nice. It's like, can I go and attack the plant? Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, there's every single remedy out there for anything is taken from nature. So there is a source of every remedy in nature, in a plant. That's where anyone would get medicine from.
Yeah.
And it's vinegar is a great one for cuts and grazes, by the way, as well.
Yes, I love that one. Stinging nettles. I don't know actually if this is true, but it could be a wives' tale, like with dock leaves if you get stung. But they always live together. It's really weird.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I know very wise people who say that's just a placebo, but I've watched it, you know, work many times.
Yeah, yeah, it does. I think one of them got stung the other day, and I was like, right, dock leaf, and then I did think, oh, I don't know, is it a placebo? But Brianna liked it. I was like, yeah, go for it.
No, I've often thought actually about, you know, and I've written a lot for myself about why we lost all this knowledge and how it. Sort of how anthropologically we might have lost this knowledge. And there are lots of answers to that out there. But, you know, mushrooms specifically, we've lost from the culture in the last sort of 100 years, because we got very scared of germs and bacteria.
Yeah.
We got very scared of all of it, and we killed it all off. If there's any kind of mold or bacteria, anything growing that looks unusual, we'd kill it off.
Yeah.
So that's why it's sort of gradually coming back into the West, I think. As we're realizing that it is sanitary to eat mushrooms that are good for us, but a lot of them are poisonous.
Yeah.
But you know, all these old wives' tales have been lost. And I was with a Bulgarian friend about a month ago. Somebody, not a friend, friend of a friend who I met, and he said, you know, in Bulgaria, when a child has asthma, we just throw them in the nettles bush when they're young, and then no more asthma.
Wow, so, how cool is that?
I'm not suggesting that anyone does that.
Don't do that.
But it's funny how some cultures have still got an affinity with, you know, these things as medicines, whereas it's lost elsewhere.
That is incredible, definitely. And we're going back to like the somatic side of it. Is there, how would that help with us as like going into the forest and just, I suppose, relaxing, really?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it's like the most important part of it for me, actually, is no matter what we're doing or where we are, if we have the techniques with which to drop out of a nervous system problem or tension or stress or mental overactivity, if we have the tools with which to drop and sink and just be and sit, and I mean lie down on the floor and just not think, right?
Yeah.
That is possible. It's meditation, it's whatever you want to call it, but it's a state.
Yeah.
And it's effective being taught and led into that state. So that's being led in meditations is very good. So working with the body to bring us into connection with that state and bring us into familiarity with being in that state for a continuous basis is a very powerful medicine in itself. It also enables us to be neurologically receptive. So I'm trying to get people to drop out of their resistance and into acceptance. And it means that they start getting suggestions and they start to like suggestions and like and trust things. And as we get into that kind of socially conducive state, which is out of fight or flight and into an alkaline, calm state of being, we just receive information and enjoy stuff more. So that is really important, the movement of joints and the strengthening of tendons and the safe, careful approach to that. This is why I do small groups, only 10 people max in the woods, because everyone matters as an individual and everyone's body is different. But that's somatic. So I teach personally breath work and resetting the nervous system and resetting the vagus nerve. And I teach guided meditation. I also teach things like Tibetan rites and exercises, yogic exercises and movement exercises for shoulders and hips and getting everything really balanced if possible and aligned. And so that is a theme. That is a theme in all my work, that we are going to tune the toolkit, the body, into a better state with which to then do anything. Obviously, needless to say, doing that for a whole week and being introduced to new things and being cooked for and sleeping under the trees and this kind of perpetual cascade is what I love about being there and is what works. So the somatics are key. And if we're not opening the body, if we're not furthering and strengthening and mobilizing the body, we are dying a little bit quicker every day. So yeah, it's something I'd like to drill in. And all I say is that I just show people what works for me and what my practice is. And I expose them to as many different somatic exercises as I can so they can pick and choose which works for them, which feels good for them. We only need to take one or two good things into our practice, into our routine every year, month or year, really, to make massive improvements. So somatics is just about, for me, is just about you practice as many different things as you can until you find what really feels good and works repeatedly for you. And then you continually do it and get out of your head and drop into it. And I can say that with extended exposure and with extra practice and with hard work, for me in nature, when I do my exercise in nature, it carries through when I go anywhere else. I bring it with me, that feeling that I've done that work. So super important stuff.
That's really good. Now we are going to go to a short break. See you the other side. I just wanted to share with you that I am now an ambassador for Toby Gifts, and they are an incredible company who do coconut bowls, upcycled rice bags, recycled plastic notebooks in the form of elephant dung paper. Yes, you heard that right. Coconut spoons and bamboo straws. And Toby Gifts is an incredible company owned by English entrepreneur Hannah Hodson, and she wanted to build an ethical fair trade and socially responsible business selling coconut and smoothie bowls to the UK. And it was founded with a triple bottom line philosophy where people and planet are just as important as profit. The team established partnerships with many different groups in Sri Lanka to build a brighter future for their local communities. and it is such a lovely company to work for. They're fair trade, they have the ability to directly change lives, as well as our ever-present sense of evolving environmental changes help us to keep focus on making the world a better place. So you can get a discount with tovigifts.com. Go to tovigifts.com and in the checkout put YogiGemma10 for a 10% discount, and go ahead and find out more about them because they are an incredible company and I absolutely love them. The coconut bowls are so beautiful. The children really love them. They also love the straws as well. It's just, oh, I just love it so, so much. And actually, I'm using the notebooks for all of my clients as well. So yes, go and have a look. It's tovigifts.com and use YogiGemma10 at the checkout for your wonderful discount. Yesterday I had a lady, well, yesterday I did a restorative yoga class, and I said to everybody after about 20 minutes of meditation to start with, let go. So think of something negative that you no longer need anymore, and that might be like a toxic friendship or something else that is really niggling you. Let it go, because you are just overthinking it constantly. Let it go. And I said, on your inhale, say let, on your exhale, go. And then she started crying. I was like, oh no. And I did say, you might cry, you might be stressed out, this might trigger you, but it's okay. You're in a safe space. You can do this. And yeah, she was like, oh, I'm really sorry. I said, don't worry about it. It's fine. This is what I wanted you to do. Yeah. I want you to cry. But and she was like, no, release. I needed to hear it. Yeah, yeah. And I said, you don't have to tell me what it is. And she never did. But I was just like, just let go. And she said, oh, thank you so much, I needed that right now. And I think the more people say it, or you go on to these retreats and things and go into nature, you then actually can come back into yourself. And I think we've certainly lost that ability to actually think for ourselves, that like social media and working and just everything, there's so much energy, negative energy, the news and things like that, that you can absorb. But you can then choose not to absorb it. That's the thing, I think. But then working with what you do would be incredible to get rid of all of that and to learn the techniques to then not take it back.
Yeah, totally. Yes. And I think that people, I included, everyone I know, loves going to a good yoga class or a good session or having a good treatment, because it reminds them what's inside is good. And safe and feels like their intuitive self.
Yeah.
So because I'm fully aware of that, and I love helping people get into those positions and states if I can, but they have to get themselves there, of course. And we have a tendency to pick up patterns as human beings and smudge them into so they fit into our life.
Yeah.
Now, that's the issue with going in and out of classes and back into our life, in and out of sessions and back into our life. We never actually find the time to go from the class to the tree or to the tent.
Yes.
And nowhere near our phone or people we know, to then reflect and integrate what we're learning into our true self. Because we immediately, normally we all immediately go back to our creature comforts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, so that extended exposure is where we really get to meet and play with our intuition, not just be reminded of it.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got an intuition. That's fine. I can go back to my job. No.
Yeah.
This is my intuition. Now, how does this feel tonight? How does this feel in the morning? How does it feel with interacting with new people? How does this feel 3 days in a row? How does this feel being connected to my intuition and not looking at my phone for 3 days?
Yeah.
You know, this that's a big, I mean, that's people's biggest resistance often, is
which is bad.
Their phone. Yeah. I mean, it's, you just have to try it for a while at some point in your adult life. Just put the phone down and turn it off for a week. You see what happens. The world does not fall apart.
Yeah.
And your intuition starts to speak to you from the inside more, because you're getting less signals from the outside. It helps you. It helps me, I should say.
Yeah.
So that extended exposure, and just the intuition that's speaking to us, it's always there. You can always tune back into it, but don't just smudge that intuition back into your existing pattern if you know that you want change. If we want to shift and change, which we do, if we're going into that room, we want to shift.
Yeah.
We know that we can shift. So stepping outside the comfort zone is what I talk about a lot. And that's where our intuition, because once you step outside the comfort zone and step into the unknown, your ego can't control it anymore.
Yes.
The only thing that's got your back is your intuition. And it starts to just become your best friend.
Yes.
So anyway, I'll bang on about this connection forever. This is exactly the thing, you know, talking about. I love.
It's so true. What kind of breath work do you do as well? Because I love breath work. It's just amazing. And it's free. It's like it in is. Here and we don't ever yeah. use it properly. And we should.
No, it's the, but it's really remarkable. And everybody agrees that really self-practices and gets into a dedicated practice daily with some good breath work. I teach something really simple normally called, I call it 5-5. It's just 5 seconds in through the nose, 5 seconds out through the nose. And as you know from being a yoga teacher, that is part of pranayama, just like every modern practice of breath work that has different names.
Yeah.
The 5-5 is named under one practice nowadays as coherent breath work because it creates coherence between mind and heart. But it's basically that middle section of pranayama where in the ancient yogic prana, where you're doing symmetrical breathing.
Yeah.
Five seconds in, 5 seconds out is actually quite short for a yoga prana breath, but it's quite long for a lot of people who aren't breathing correctly.
Yeah.
So I start there, very basically stillness through the nose, nasal breathing. And 5-5 does produce nitric oxide after about 15 to 20 breaths in the lung cavity around the lung. So you start to get the bliss hormones and the high feelings from it. And it's a very, you know, it's a simple breath technique that allows you to cut out the noise and just focus on the nostril and the temperature and the sensations. If we overcomplicate breath, it can get very yang, intense.
Yeah.
And trying to get yin when we're doing breath, I feel.
Yeah. And actually, I think when you look at a child breathing as well, they breathe correctly because they haven't been untaught. What's the word? Yeah. They they just breathe how they should, which is breathing into the abdomen and using your diaphragm rather than breathing shallowly into your chest and nothing else is moving. And I think we have lost that power again to breathe properly.
You said at the beginning, you said about climbing trees and now babies. It's like sometimes in my classes, I'll just get people to lie in a position that a baby would lie down in.
Yeah.
You know, with the legs flopping or the arms up in the air, just sort of dangling around.
Yeah.
Babies really know. They're doing it right.
They do. They really do. And why have we changed? We shouldn't change. It's not good. How would you, if someone was new to meditation, how would you kind of do it? Would you say, right, do an hour? Would you say 5 minutes? What kind of thing would you say?
My one of my lines I picked up a long time ago from my teacher was just 2 minutes a day of 100% self-love and focus.
Yes.
So all it takes is 2 minutes, actually. But you have to, even if it's just 90 seconds, but you've got to be there 100%.
Yeah.
Drop the stuff, drop the job, drop the family, drop the ego, drop the guilt, drop the shame, drop the fear, and just be there and just accept yourself for 2 minutes. And during that 2 minutes, focus on one thing. And breath can be it.
Yeah.
That's, if you can do that, your whole day starts to become around this 2 minutes. And then you just want to expand that 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So that's the best place to start. And it might even be, some people like to do finger counting to really focus the mind. And tapping is really nice.
Yeah,
you know, things like this, you know, EMF techniques. But if you can just be still with your eyes closed, lying down for 2 minutes and just tell yourself you love yourself.
because a lot of people don't, again.
You don't necessarily always believe yourself at the beginning.
Yes.
It can be challenging, but start.
It'll
work itself in.
Yeah. And where can we find your retreat? Like, what date is it on? And yeah, tell us more about that.
Wow. Okay. I've got three. The first is in July. The second is in August, although it starts on the 30th of July. So it goes into August. And the third is in September. And they're 1 week each. Now, people don't have to stay for the whole week, but I recommend and encourage that people come for a whole week of immersion and complete disconnection. And it's from Sunday to Sunday, and we've got Mad Hatter's tea parties as lunch closing ceremonies on the final Sunday. And yeah, I'm going to be leading classes alongside some of my teachers, yoga teachers and mentors from the last 10, 15 years of my life, and putting on these amazing meals every day and really creating this kind of community of people that want to learn and change by doing an immersion. So these 3 weeks are the first 3 weeks, and people can book on the website, or I really encourage people to get in touch and book a discovery call with me and have a chat about what they want to get out of it.
Yeah,
because it's a personal journey for everyone. But yeah, my website is ombrella.co.uk and my Instagram is om_brella, which is OHM_BRELLA. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds amazing. So good. And what if it's raining? It doesn't matter, you get wet.
We get some tarps up. Yeah, no, nice. It won't be a problem. It won't be a problem. The yoga deck is in the trees. It has a cover. The dining area down in the glade has a cover. I tell people to bring a sleeping bag if they're very cold souls.
Yeah.
At night. But otherwise, you know, there's fires everywhere and log burners and very hot, nourishing meals and beautiful company. And basically the only thing that we can't do if it's really bad weather is construct things outdoors.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter, because we can still, during those afternoons outdoors, when we would be, we could force people to do it in the rain, but I think a journey with a foraging master to learn about the herbology and to make something nice, like a soup under the tarp or something together, may be the solution. But honestly, nothing ever stops me. The weather doesn't stop me. So
yeah,
we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. That sounds so amazing. And I think it's needed as well, because so many people will go to retreats and things, but it's nothing like this. So it's definitely something that will bring you back to being in nature, which is where we should be anyway, where we came from.
I say it's not a retreat because I don't want people to retreat from their life. I want them to progress and advance.
Yeah.
And look, people can come and not do the classes and not do the conservation. They could just read their book in the geodesic dome if they want, or go and hang out in the yurt with the dog. But this is a challenge. This is for people, you know, if you want a challenge, you want to be challenged and pushed in a safe and fun way. And this is not about juices and yoga. This is all of that stuff is just a given.
Yeah,
philosophy and the way to live is really where we want to be. And also, it's not prescriptive. So this is for people who want to explore and want an adventure. Yeah. And it's completely inclusive. Anyone will be able to do everything. So this is the beautiful thing. And hopefully, everyone at every level will. Of their journey will be able to benefit and progress in some way in their techniques.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of like forest bathing as well, going into the woods and just being there and breathing.
Right out there.
Right. I love that.
It took me a long time to find a site that was remote, but
But
yeah, really getting into the woods and feeling like there's nothing else around.
Yeah. Yeah.
That does a lot of the work.
Yes, I love that. And especially when we're out with the kids as well, I will always make them look at leaves or flowers or trees or anything and look at the symmetry, because there's so much around than just being present right there and then, looking at the tiny flower and how it's growing and where it's growing from. Because I think as well, we've gone away from that. Yeah, you go for a walk, but are you actually going for a walk? Yes, you're moving, but are you looking at your phone? You're not looking out and up and around. You're just,
This is a big part. So the physical relationship we have to life and the non-physical relationship we are having. And we fill ourselves up mentally and emotionally with too much stuff.
Yeah.
And when you're in nature, it's the metaphor I use all the time. If you look at how a petal will arrange itself next to another petal, or the leaves of a tree is above you, they'll separate themselves so they can all get light. There is a perfect balance in how much stuff is being used and produced.
Yeah.
And humans are the only thing in the universe, as far as I know, but definitely on Earth, that don't obey the laws of nature. We consume and produce more than we are able to actually physically handle.
Yeah.
So by using the metaphor, by just looking at the plant and seeing how the leaves have changed from today to tomorrow and so on, and noticing that the perfect order of everything is arranged in this code, in this pattern, that we don't obey mentally or emotionally.
Yeah.
But we can obey it physically. We can actually, yoga is about geometry, isn't it? So it's about geometry. When we start behaving physically in that way, it encodes into our mentality. Yeah. We're suddenly able to sift and arrange. That is the science. I mean, that's the best way I can describe how the metaphor comes into play, and it continuously comes into play and produces a huge sense of humor because people see how ridiculous it is that we're putting so much into our lives.
Yeah.
Whereas we're only actually able to do so much. So that is why I'm doing it there too. And it's the greatest metaphor to use.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it sounds amazing. And what are two things to sum up today's conversation? Now I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
Come to it.
True transformation, change comes from dedication and learning and putting things into action. And the laws of nature are the best teacher.
Yes, definitely. And where can we find you? What's your website or your social media channels?
So the website is on umbrella.co.uk, which is umbrella.co.uk. And umbrella on Instagram with an underscore, so umbrella.
Oh, thank you. And is there anything else you want to say or add to it?
I just want to send everyone a lot of blessings, and however anyone finds their practice and what makes them feel invigorated to create and live, brilliant, and keep doing it.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much. It's been really nice having you on.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Gemma, for having me.
That's all right. Thank you so, so much for being here with me today. It means the world to me, and my heart is so full of gratitude right now. If you are feeling pulled to, I would love you to leave a review over on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever they're called, or Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from, whichever platform you are on. Leave a review. Even do a 5-star rating if you fancy it. And yes, go and follow me over on Instagram, gemma.haley.niece, or I'm on LinkedIn as Gemma Niece. So thank you so, so much for being here, and always reach out to me. I'm always have my DMs open, as again, Instagram, gemma.haley.niece, or LinkedIn, or go on my website, which is www.gemmaniece.com. So thank you so much, and I will see you again next week.